Jenny Brown was just 10 years old when she lost a leg to bone cancer. Throughout the ordeal, her constant companion was a cat named Boogie. Years later, she would make the connection between her feline friend and the farm animals she ate, acknowledging that most of America's domesticated animals live on industrialized farms and are viewed as mere production units. Raised in a conservative Southern Baptist family in Kentucky, Brown had been taught to avoid asking questions, but she found her calling and the courage to speak out. She left a flourishing career as a film and television producer after going undercover and exposing horrific animal abuse in Texas stockyards. She writes about her transformation in the new book, The Lucky Ones, which introduces readers to Brown's crowning achievement, the renowned Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary she established with her husband in 2004. Again, the name of the book is The Lucky Ones, My Passionate Fight for Farm Animals. Jenny Brown, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Joe.
Well, congratulations on the book and congratulations on all the great work. It's very cool to see you out there.
It's pretty cool to me.
I mean, we've known about you for a long time, but for the rest of the world and for you to tell the story beyond our borders, it's quite something.
Yes, and by the way, Diane Rehm is outside with brass knuckles waiting for you.
Yeah, well,
it was an honor to be on
her
show.
Again, I'm sure it was. I've interviewed her. She's been on the show. She's a lovely woman.
She is.
We've had her on. We've talked about her dog. Was her dog in the studio with you?
Her dog was not in the studio, but
she usually brings her dog.
She's a hottie for a 75-year-old woman. She looks fantastic.
She's great.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't think I have a problem with her, but boy, her producers are hard as nails.
I'm learning about the NPR world because there's another show I think I'm going to be on soon, and it was an issue as well.
But. Yeah, no, it's really interesting. And we were like, well, we know Jenny. You know, our name's in the book, for goodness sakes. No, you can't do it until then. They slap our wrists.
Oh, so sorry.
That's
I'm just
right.
honored to be a guest at any of these shows to get the word out, not only about the book, but of course, for the mission in terms of raising awareness about the plight of farm animals and also raising awareness about our charitable organization, Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary. But this is essentially a memoir with a mission.
When you look at what you've done and you have this mission and you have this passion, how hard of a sell is it?
Well,
because you have to attack it on different fronts, don't you?
Of course. And challenging people, well, let's rephrase that. People feel challenged when you speak to them about the plight of farm animals and looking at them as not as livestock or commodities, but as the sentient, thinking, feeling beings that they are, just like dogs and cats. But in our society, you know, we have some blinders on when it comes to animal agriculture, and because it's very much out of sight and out of mind. So, you know, the book's not all about that, though. It's my life's journey into awareness, basically, about how we treat the animals we eat. And so my journey to get there, you know, I've lived a little bit of a crazy life. I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, lost my leg to cancer as a child, went to college, read some literature that really opened my eyes to the human treatment of animals in animal experimentations, animals used for entertainment. You know, I was a child that loved the circus and the zoos. Now I just see them as very sad forms of entertainment and for, exploitive industries. And of course, I worked in film and television for about a decade. Did not get completely out of touch with animal advocacy, but I had done several undercover video assignments for a variety of animal advocacy groups. And in 2002, when I went undercover in Texas, going from stockyard to stockyard, that was the week that really changed my life. Because if everybody could see and into the factory farms, into the slaughterhouses, into the stockyards, and where these animals are being brought in and go through the auction ring and are taken to the slaughterhouse from there oftentimes. The treatment of them, I think if most people could see, they would realize that it's something that they need to look into.
Mm. You have a statistic in the book that is the 10 billion animals.
It's 10 billion land animals in this country that are slaughtered every year for human consumption, and that doesn't include sea life, of course, and that's exactly. And fish are not sea vegetables. They are also sentient beings that feel pain, love life, fear death, and again, feel pain and suffering. And so, but even if you don't care about fish and you disagree with me on that, what we're doing to our ocean systems is destroying them. We're raping and pillaging the oceans of all its riches and ruining precious environments.
We had Matt Regney on yesterday talking about he is in Northampton and has written a new book talking about what is happening to bluefin tuna, marlin, swordfish, and these sports fish, and how you should be able to go out in the ocean, look at the fish finder, and see hundreds, and now you don't see anything.
No, and we've created dead zones from the runoff of the factory farms. It's an incredible amount of manure that they produce, and oftentimes when there's flooding, it goes right into the water. Things like the oil spill too, of course, has been very damaging to sea life, but it's a major, major issue. And when people are popping shrimp like they're popcorn, each and every one of those little guys is a someone and not a something. And I know that sounds, pretty extreme, but I'm just, I'm around, not fish, but I'm around these animals on a daily basis. We have over 200 rescued farm animals on any given day. So they're not abstractions to me. I'm with them. They all have a name. They think, they feel, they suffer, they enjoy life, they seek affection. When they're in an environment where they're loved and respected and not treated as commodities, they behave very differently. And the unique opportunities of farm animal sanctuaries is that people come face to face with animals they only know as food. So while they're meeting Andy, an 800-pound pig, and he's sitting up and smiling and wanting you to pet him and then flops over for a belly rub like a dog would, you are hearing how Andy came to us. His individuality, his personality, his likes and his dislikes. But at the same time, you're learning how millions of other Andes are living in that very moment. So that's the unique opportunity we have, is to put people back in touch with these animals so that hopefully we can open hearts and minds to their plight and to try to get people to maybe consider, moving towards leaving animals off their plate.
Because when you look at the actual farm, and you're talking about, when we're talking about billions of animals being killed every year for our consumption, and you look at, I don't mean this in any way of downplaying what it is, the incredibly important work that you do, but you have 200 animals on this farm, and it really, and for them obviously, a great deal,
right?
They've hit the jackpot. But how do you put that in context in your mind of, yes, we're doing very good work for these animals, we're getting the word out to other people, but my God, so much else needs to be done?
Well, I like to go back, to the sanctuary, which I call the bubble. Everything's right in our little bubble. And if I wasn't doing something about this, because I know what I know and I've seen what I've seen, I think I would be in a padded cell. But instead, I choose to do something. And even though we're only able to help so many individuals, we feel that we're spreading the message and helping farm animals everywhere by trying to make the invisible visible. If the famous saying, if slaughterhouses had glass walls, there'd be a lot more vegetarians. But it's all out of sight and out of mind. We're so disconnected as a society. So for those thousands of people that come through our doors during the summertime, they have an opportunity to see them as something other than food. So our advocacy work in that way, we feel like we're having a greater impact than beyond the animals, the individuals that we're able to help.
How do you think, or how did we get, and I realize this is a huge question, but I'm just, and I don't want you to gloss over it, but just basically, how did we get to this point? Because we were, you go back 50 years and you read Charlotte's Web. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a farm, and Wilbur and old Wilbur may be slaughtered, and okay, but this is one family, and that's their food. And we've gone from that to this industrialized, like, megaplex. And how did we get to that?
Well, it started with the invention of vitamin D and realizing we could put more animals in the interior of buildings and for better control and better management. And then we created antibiotics, which, you know, with all these animals living in such close confinement, all the animals are fed therapeutic antibiotics to keep them from getting sick. So it was, you know, sort of in the dawning of the age of industrialization that we put animals into that mix as well. You know, meat used to be something that was consumed a couple of times a week. But gone are the days of Little House on the Prairie where Pa would go outside and cry when he had to kill the family cow to feed the family during the winter. We as consumers never even see these animals. Children in urban environments never stop to think about the someone between their two pieces of bread and a burger. You know, I mean, that's how out of touch we are. And it's all profit driven. Big ag is, you know, they're right out there with pharmaceuticals and oil in terms of lobbying. And we really have lost our morality when it comes to 98-99% of animals who are raised in industrialized factory farms in extreme confinement and basically denied everything that makes life worth living to them. And yes, there are the small farms, and I know there are farmers out there trying to have better treatment for their animals, but even on the small farms, typically, animals are castrated, their tails are docked, there's a number of things, and no matter what, dairy cows, in order to keep producing milk, her calves are taken away from her within a day of birth, in any size farm. And mind you, organic has nothing to do with animal welfare. Free range, cage free are completely meaningless, and not governed. You know, these are clever labels to make the consumers feel better about their purchases.
You know, and you're so right. I find myself confused by a lot of this because we've had Temple Grandin on the show many times, and I don't know how you feel about her. But a very interesting woman who is autistic, and she has is able to communicate with animals in a very special way. And one of the things that she is famous for is for coming up with this way to lead these animals to slaughter in a more humane way, which to me seems odd because they still end up dead.
They do. And I think she's done a great disservice to animal advocacy because basically she sort of made out to be this hero. She doesn't communicate with the animals. She says that she understands their feelings and their fear.
She feels because they think in pictures and so does she.
Exactly. But yeah. I think she makes a lot of assumptions there. But she basically focuses on their last few moments of life and making it a little bit little less scary. What about the rest of their lives? And what about the pain that they endure when they're shot in the head with a captive bolt gun, oftentimes not completely rendering them unconscious or dead? And so these cows, for instance, are strung up, and oftentimes they're still conscious as they die piece by piece as they move along these very fast-moving industrialized slaughter lines. And I know this is a, you know, it's a difficult topic to talk about in the morning with your listeners, but it's gruesome, and death is gruesome. And, you know, my mantra is, if we can live happily and healthily without causing violence and harm to others, why wouldn't we? And we are, you know, I'm not talking about the Eskimos. I don't think we should be comparing ourselves to the lions and the tigers and that they're carnivores. We're not them. And we need to look at now and not base what we do now on what we've always done. You know, we owned slaves for most of civilization. But as we evolve and hopefully evolve morally and compassionately, this issue affects the most number of beings on the planet. We scorn Korea for their dog consumption, yet animals that are smarter than dogs, pigs, proven to be smarter than dogs, they're the fourth smartest animals on the planet. You know, it's primates, dolphins, elephants, and then pigs. What we do to pigs and standard agricultural practices would put people in jail if the same were done to dogs. It's a schizophrenic relationship we have to these animals. And how do we compartmentalize these animals in our mind where some we love and some we eat? And I just want to plant that seed and get people to start thinking about that, because these animals are just as intelligent, just as emotionally complex, even down to every chicken who at the sanctuary has a name and is treated as an individual. It's opening your mind and heart to looking at them differently and to rethinking this culture that we've grown up in where, I mean, you know, I don't want to call it brainwashing, but it sort of is. A lot of people say, oh, I couldn't be vegetarian for health reasons. Well, you're going to your doctor who also thinks you need meat and dairy in your diet, who also grew up in the same system. Eating animals is a deeply ingrained cultural identity. It's for taste, for habit. But again, just because it's always been this way doesn't make it right. You know, you can't say, well, we've always murdered people. Don't we re-examine that, and we're against that? This is sort of the same questions I pose in the book. And again, it's not all buzzkill. There's happy stories about the animals and interspecies relationships and, you know, the stories of the individuals who have come through our doors, stories of people who have come to the sanctuary who begin to look at things a little differently.
So who are the lucky ones? You're a lucky one.
I'm a lucky one because I'm a cancer survivor, and I have to say I now look at my losing my leg as a blessing, because that's really what has brought attention to me, to our cause. People think it's fascinating that, you know, I have a little goat and a little sheep that also wear artificial legs when there's proper fitting. Sometimes they pop off and we have to go find them out in the pasture. but with someone with an artificial leg, that was the story that really got people's attention. I feel blessed that I'm able to be a voice for the voiceless through my own suffering and adversity. And I think that's why I'm here today. You know, I'm sensitive to suffering. I was a child that suffered for about 3 years with an amputation and awful chemotherapy, lost all my hair, you know, 30 pounds underweight, couldn't go to school. And it just really made me aware of how children sort of have no say in their and what happens to them oftentimes. And you know, I had no say at all in whether or not I was going to lose my leg or not. But it's the suffering, I think, that I'm just so, so sensitive to. And farm animals, if you look across the board, in terms of animals being used in entertainment, circuses, puppy mills, you name it, farm animals, the need to really rethink our relationship with farm animals is the greatest and the most important cause, again, because it affects the most number of sentient beings out there. They think, they feel, they suffer, and in all the ways that matter, we are all truly the same. And that's what we try to talk to people about at the sanctuary, not in a proselytizing way, not in an alienating way. It's just we feel the obligation to inform. We're not taught these things in school. We're not even taught that a cow has to have a calf in order to produce milk. But we never stop and think, huh, we're the only species that drinks milk into adulthood, and we're the only species that drinks the milk of another species. So, you know, it's just, why don't we drink zebra milk or dog milk or rat milk, you know? It's because these animals are very docile. They're easily controlled. And I just want to reexamine that. And that's what we do in the book, The Lucky Ones, which I did have a co-writer with, my friend Gretchen Primack. I stay very busy running an animal sanctuary, and we basically had a year to do this. It was a preemptive bid from Penguin Avery. Avery's an imprint of Penguin. And so my friend Gretchen was instrumental in helping me sort of shape the story. Hours and hours and hours of interviews. I really couldn't have done it without my friend Gretchen. And she's a writer and a poet here in the Hudson Valley and an animal advocate as well.
Excellent. Well, it is The Lucky Ones, my passionate fight for farm animals. You're going to have a book release party with Golden Notebook, right, at the Klein Art?
Yeah.
On August
6th at the Klein Art James Gallery. It's hosted by the Golden Notebook, and it's going to be good times.
And you can find out more information by going to the Woodstock Sanctuary website. It's woodstocksanctuary.org, woodstocksanctuary.org, to find out about Jenny, to find out about the work, to find out about the book, to find out about the sanctuary itself. Again, it's woodstocksanctuary.org. The book is The Lucky Ones, My Passionate Fight for Farm Animals, published by Avery. Jenny Brown, congratulations. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe.
Great pleasure. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.